Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking today about what you really want. What you really want wants you. At least that's the premise of Dr. Toni LaMotta, who's my guest today, and that also is the title of her book. And she wants to help you uncover qualities that you may not even recognize that you have so that you can really have what you want. Dr. Toni LaMotta, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Donna. Great to be here.
Now, do you mind if I call you Toni?
Not at all.
Oh, thank you so much. Toni, I met you at Quantum Leap a few months back, and when we were there, you told me about your book, and I said, do send me a copy of it. And this has been quite a journey for you to get to the point of writing this book, because you are a minister. Of course, you speak in different places. You currently are the director of Enlightened Enterprises, which is an internet-based organization where you like to support women. You also have gone through a number of changes yourself to be able to take the positioning that you have at this point. You have worked with major U.S. companies like AT&T, IBM, Pennzoil, etc. You also were a Catholic nun, and you were a pastoral associate for 16 years before you became a minister 12 years ago. You've got a number of degrees. You've been involved with different universities. And someone might say, I think you're having a good time with all of these various experiences and sharing them with other people. Is that true?
That is very true. You've certainly done your homework. But, yes, I love my life, Donna. And I've had a very eclectic life and have been in a lot of things. But I was going to say dabbled, and I stopped because it really wasn't dabbling. Everything I did thoroughly and fully. And then it would be on to the next thing. And so that's why I now help women who are reinventing themselves, because I've done it over and over.
I had to chuckle because right at the beginning of your book, and on the cover of your book, you have dragonflies. And when I saw that, and a dragonfly for you is like a totem,
mm-hmm.
And I have to chuckle because I have a friend of many, many years who is now in her 80s, and the dragonfly to her has always been magical. And I discovered this one day when we were out driving. I was visiting her in Los Angeles, and she said, oh, a dragonfly, I've got so many good things that are going to be happening to me. Look at that beautiful creature. Of course, they dart in and they dart out, and they are absolutely gorgeous. But why is it that the dragonfly has had such a significance for you?
Well, interestingly enough, the dragonfly has several meanings depending on the country you look at, and it's even deeper transformation than the butterfly, because it comes from the muck and the mire and then transforms in these beautiful colors. But what I love about it especially is that the true colors don't come forth until it reaches maturity. And I think that that is such a symbol for our life, that most of us like kind of struggle through life for a while until we come to a mature state and we start accepting ourselves and owning who we truly are. And that's when the light starts to shine. At least I've seen that in my own life. And, you know, I spent most of my life trying to be what everybody else wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally got who I am, my light's shining brilliantly now. And so the dragonfly is just not only a fun symbol, it's very symbolic. And they show up in my life anytime something major is about to happen. It's so interesting. They show up a lot almost every day. I live in Florida, and I'm on a pool and a whole body of water, so they're always around. But primarily, like when something significant's about to happen, all of a sudden like 40 of them will dart in front of my face. It's just been an amazing thing. And so people have begun to give me presents of dragonflies. But I really think that it's like a hopeful symbol for people of the light and the color that's there and what what can happen in our lives when we simply let ourselves grow up. It's not like we have to do a whole lot of stuff. It's just, you know, life happens, and the 20s aren't meant to be something where you really understand your life, and even the 30s when you're still kind of like working your way to the top somewhere. But when you start hitting 40s, 50s, and 60s, it becomes like, I can relax into life. And to me, the whole message that I find myself sharing is really about relaxing into life and stop trying to make life work. Allow it to unfold. And
That's a challenge for an American, Tony. There's been research through the years about Europeans and Americans, and they say Americans are least likely to take time for themselves. They are the least likely to take even vacations. They will skip vacations for years. Americans are such industrious people, and people in Europe will say, sorry, I'm going to go to the seaside, or I'm going to go and fix a bunch of pasta today, or I'm going to just go and sit and sing to the moon. And the Americans usually have a very tough time with that. Why do you think we as Americans, and we come from all kinds of backgrounds, that it's so difficult for us to make it okay to just relax? That's been something through most of my life that wasn't okay.
Well, you know, I think there's something with the whole, like, Protestant ethic that our country grew up on, which is work hard. And, you know, you have to work for everything you have, which is a wonderful piece in itself, but it got translated. I know it got translated in my life as you weren't supposed to be happy right now. You're supposed to, like, work for the future somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And even save for the future. And all the things were about working for sometime later on, and if you get into the spiritual realms, it's even for the next life. It's not even for now. And I don't know when it happened in my life, but at some point I really made that switch and said, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be happy now. In fact, I remember reading a book by the Dalai Lama called Happiness, and it startled me because the beginning of the book he said the whole purpose of life is to be happy. And I remember saying, wait, there's got to be more than this. I'm supposed to accomplish something, do something. And
mm-hmm.
But I started to laugh, and I'm really getting it. And by the way, I just came home from Alaska. I had a fabulous vacation. And I think that I'm really learning, and it's different because everyone, I'm into internet marketing, and all the internet marketers tell you to work hard and set a goal and plan this. And what I have found is when I follow them, I drive myself nuts. But when I really let life unfold, my action comes from a whole different place. And it's amazing what's been happening in my life as a result.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been such a joy to watch it unfold and see who I meet and see who, you know, the experiences that I have that I couldn't have planned if I tried. You know, I wouldn't have even thought of planning those. And so I'm teaching people around me, and I was always described as a type A person. You know, I accomplish more in probably an hour of days sometimes than people accomplish in a week, only because it becomes very focused and it's exciting. It's no longer work that I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I never feel like I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've gotten to a point where I say to people, I don't work anymore. And I really don't. I'm having such a good time at what I'm doing. So it's been wonderful.
Well, they probably look at you and say, oh, gee whiz, that can't be possible. It can't be possible. But it is. And you're right. There is a rhythm that when you trust, release, let go, let God, whatever terminology you want to use, and you just make it okay. And you know that you have enough time to get everything done, and you just do whatever needs to do, and you work in that rhythm. It is amazing how things fall into place.
Well, and it's also, I mean, I don't mean that you should never have any dreams or goals. I think that it's important to know what you want in life and really what you really want. And that's, I keep coming back to those phrases because most people think they want maybe money. And then they get money and they're like, oh my God, now I have to manage it. What do I do with this? How do I handle it? And or they think they want a relationship and then they say, remind me, why did I ask for this? You know? I've counseled so many people over the years who have something specific that they want. And I don't think it's a bad thing to say, okay, what is your heart's desire? But to really, most of us don't even let ourselves get in touch with what our heart wants. We're told what's good out there and what we should want. And I know for years I was following what everybody else told me was supposed to be the goal. And it's not been what my life's been about. I mean, as a minister, for example, it's like the big mega churches. And, you know, I'm not an administrator. I don't want to run a big mega church. And for years I thought there was something wrong with me because that was the goal. And when I realized the amazing ministry, if you will, that I have with the internet and with people on the radio, with people, you know, all kinds of experiences that I have now, it's so much bigger than it could have been had I stayed in one place.
It's a whole different paradigm. Now, you have four stages in your book, which is titled What You Really Want Wants You. And there's four stages, four points. You say, number one, I'm not in control. I'm a victim. I ask, why me? Things in my life keep happening to me. Phase two, I co-create my reality. I am powerful. I understand the law of attraction. Things happen by me. Three, I surrender to something higher than myself and become a vehicle for service. Things happen through me. And four, I recognize my oneness with all there is. Things happen as me. Those are four levels, and I know that sounds rather simple, but the truth is we all, on one perspective, one paradigm or another, evolve through that. And it just seems that when we come into this life, we come in free and clear, and then because of various components that are around us, whether it's our environment or our family, whatever may come in, it causes all kinds of assumptions to be made. We absorb it. And then becoming the individual, going through that process which you were talking about earlier, it is what do we dump and what do we keep?
Absolutely. I always say after school we have to unlearn everything we've just learned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's important to be socialized in school, and then to really grow up, to become an adult, is to decide what you want to keep and what you want to throw away. And those stages, and I didn't make those up, by the way, they come from, well, they come from several sources, but I learned them through Dr. Michael Beckwith from California and, you know, embellished a little bit on my own experience of them. But I think it's so powerful that you can actually see where a person's at by, or listen to where they're at by what they speak about. And
mm-hmm.
So often, you know, it's the weather, it's the economy, it's the government, it's the whatever. There's something happening. Life is happening to me, and I'm totally a victim of it. And what I like is the good news is that's still a stage of spiritual growth. When someone's there, it's not like they're off the track. They're on their way.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you start, I like to think of it the stage where people discover that, you know, you can have parking spaces, palaces, and princes, and you can create whatever you want in your life. And I love when people are new into a teaching like that, and they just discover they can create anything, and then to really become of service. I mean, then we become the vessel that can be used. And I think that the book is written, I know the book is written from the point of view of you really need to be in stage three and four to totally grasp what I'm talking about here, because in stage three, you start allowing life to happen through you rather than feeling like you have to do it all. And if I don't do it, you know, it's not going to work. And then eventually when you really get, and I don't know that any of us live in that state of oneness all the time, but I know I've had glimpses of it, and they're awesome,
mm-hmm.
where I know, especially at times when I've been on the stage and been on a platform, and I look to my, and words are coming out of my mouth that I know I hadn't planned to say, and or I'm telling a story and saying, you know, why am I telling this story? And later on, somebody said, you know, the very thing that touched their lives was that story, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that that's when I'm being as me, that I'm out of the way. One of my images in life has been to be a flute and be the empty vessel that has holes that, you know, spirit can come through. And so that's, I know, my goal. And I actually had the opportunity to go to India a couple of years ago and receive something called the Oneness Blessing, which literally helped. You talk about the Western mind. They talk about a lot there how the Western mind is so busy because we think we have to do everything, but it literally is the way our brain is channeled and functions. And they do a blessing that helps slow down that part of your brain. And I know it was from that experience and several other things in my life that everything changed, where I no longer have to have, you know, you saw my background. I got 3 master's degrees, 2 doctorates, you know, constantly studying. And they made a comment that the more you study, the harder it is for you to surrender. And I laughed and thought, you know, my mind was so active. And now it's active, but it's like pinpointed focused instead of trying to figure everything out. It's like when I don't understand something, I say, oh, well, you know, I'll get it when I have to. It's amazing. I'm amazed at myself. I look at myself and saying, who is this? And just allowing life, oh, that didn't get done today. Okay, I guess it wasn't meant to be. It's a fabulous way of living, taking away all the ulcers and all those old problems that used to be there.
Well, you're in the flow. Now, you talk about the divine dozen in your book, and this is what the divine dozen are. Abundance, balance, beauty, freedom, joy, love, order, peace, power, unity, wisdom, wholeness. Let's talk about one of those divine dozen, and that is abundance. You have a quote in here by Dr. Michael Beckwith, and he's just a wonderful speaker. I think he's got a phenomenal presence, and I really like the way he brings words together. And you have a quote of his, lack of evidence is not evidence of lack.
Isn't that wonderful? That is one of my favorite quotes. And,
yes.
You know, one of the teachings that I find so powerful is that we think reality is what we see. And to me, spiritual maturity is recognizing that there is so much more to reality than what is present. And, for example, I have trained spiritual practitioners to go into hospitals to pray with the sick. And I always say to them, if you're walking in and you're seeing sick people, walk out. You need to walk in and see wholeness. So you don't see what the appearances are. You don't look at, you know, Michael used to say all the time, if you're reading the newspaper and feeling depressed, you're not seeing the reality. What you want to do is see what's possible. And so the whole premise here is to take a look beyond what we're looking at. You know, when we look at whatever we focus on increases. So if we're looking at something that's a challenge, like a bill you can't pay or something like that, then there's only going to be more bills you can't pay. But when you start looking at the abundance, I'm sitting here in Florida, and it rains every day lately, and we have such an abundance of weather of rain, and it's absolutely beautiful because most of the year our weather is great. So I look at this and I say, wow, you know, there is no lack and there is no limitation. And to me, one of the ways that I have brought myself into massive abundance is to notice things like that and to begin to really appreciate, like, how much is there instead of looking at, you know, we can look at the glass half empty or half full. It's an old cliche, but we can look at what's missing or we can focus on, you know, the truth of what's there. I think it was Bucky Fuller who once said that if the wealth of the universe was spread around to everyone, we would all have many millions of dollars. I mean, there's much, much out there. It's not like one person has so the other person can't. It's just there is more out there than we could possibly even imagine. So
let's address something that you bring up in your book, and that's with thought shifting. Thought shifting.
Okay.
Because we have to have a mindfulness with our thoughts. And sometimes we have habits, a habit pattern of a certain way of processing things. And if we don't like that, if that's not where we want to be, we have to be able to do the switch. Give us a suggestion on how somebody can do that.
Well, you know, I just had one today, so this is a perfect example. I discovered I have a very creative mind, and I have a mathematical background. I know how to solve problems. So I have a tendency in my life to see what's wrong and what has to be fixed. And what I discovered, somebody taught me about looking at the positive aspects, is just the way they described it. And so what I discovered is that I actually have a little book now that whenever something's going on in my life, whether it be a person that I'm relating to or a situation that seems to be challenging, I look at the positive aspects. And it's a practice that I do. I write those things down every day. But today I was in my bank, and I got a runaround. They were sending me from one person to the other, and no one seemed to be able to help me. And I was finding myself getting annoyed. And I stopped, and I started to laugh. I said, this is the moment to notice what you're thinking, because I was thinking about how inefficient they were, how they should know what they do, you know, all those thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I stopped myself literally and said, what's good about this? And, you know, I looked at what are the positive aspects here. The truth was everyone was running around trying to help me. I mean, they really were trying to solve the problem. And ultimately they couldn't, and they're sending me somewhere else. But they weren't trying to push me from one person to the other. They were there to support and help me. I mean, they all know my name. They were friendly. They were wonderful. They actually did solve one of the issues. So, I mean, I sat there with this huge grin on my face. They probably were wondering what was happening, but I changed what was going on in my mind. My mind was racing about their inefficiency and why it should happen that way, and I was in a rush and I wanted to get out there. And I stopped and said, you know, this kind of mindset isn't helping my day or anybody else's. These people are helping you. And that was just a silly example, but it happens over and over, and I know it's happening because I'm practicing looking at, I mean, the positive aspects. It's not just positive thinking, but in any relationships, when I do marriage counseling, if you think about the things you love about a person, the things that you don't love kind of fade away. They become insignificant. And I find that couples often forget why they got together in the first place. And what are the things they love about them? Like, one of my friends was telling me that her husband started getting angry and yelling at her. And rather than react to his anger, she said, I stopped and thought of what you said and said, just experience him being angry. And she said, as I was experiencing him, I suddenly realized that I married him because he's such a passionate man. And there he was exhibiting passion. And she said, it wasn't pleasant because he was screaming at me, but suddenly I just turned it all around and said, this is the passionate man that I love. And it totally dissipated their arguments. So it is practice. I mean, this is not something that happens just by saying I want it to. But we can practice, and one of the ways of practicing changing our thoughts, because I think it's challenging to sometimes even know our thoughts, but I've been learning more and more to find out, does it feel good or doesn't? Does it make me feel good? Does it make me happy or doesn't it? And when I have a thought that isn't making me feel good, I stop and say, well, what thought would feel better right now? Or, you know, if something's happening and I don't like it, well, how could I see this so that maybe I won't like it, but I'll feel better about it? And I'm finding that little everyday changing is making a huge difference. And in abundance, when I practiced abundance, and there were periods in my life where I was into a lot of lack, and what I did was really focus on what I appreciated in life. And I started a journal where every night I wrote 100 things that I was grateful for. And what I'd find myself doing is running around during the day saying, you know, oh my God, I better start noticing what I'm going to be grateful for tonight. And it got to be silly, but it got to be really fun because I started looking for things to be grateful for. And when you look for what to be grateful for, more things show up that you can be grateful for. And that whole abundance changed.
Yes, it is. Now, I want to share a cute little story that you've got in here, because one of the Divine Dozen is beauty. And this one is about a little boy. Little Johnny watched, fascinated, at his mother's smooth cold cream on her face. Why do you do that, Mommy? He asked. To make myself beautiful, she replied. Then she began to remove the cream with a tissue. What's the matter? Asked little Johnny. Are you giving up? And, you know, kids are just great. They will come out with things, and their perspectives and perceptions are really a lot of fun. And I really got a kick out of that one. Beauty, when we talk about beauty, if this applies to men or women, and typically when men hear the term beauty, they automatically think that it's applying to a female, not to them. But beauty is something that belongs to both, to everything, to everybody. And it is a process of wanting to recognize the beauty within ourselves, the beauty outside of ourselves. And it's an amazing grouping of perspectives that you bring out in your book that I think are very, very good. But you had a battle with that a little bit, didn't you?
Well, I have my what I call my signature story. When I was a young girl, my cousin was a redhead, and she still is. But we grew up going everywhere together. We were like sisters. And everywhere we went, somebody would look at her and saying, "You're so beautiful." And I'd be standing next to her feeling like, you know, what am I, chopped liver? I mean, you know. And they would look at me and say, "You're so smart." And Donna, this is a true story. The reason that I got 3 master's degrees and 2 doctorates was because I was trying to finally get to a point where somebody would not call me smart. And I was at Columbia University in a program where they only accepted a small group of people. You think by then I would say, okay, get it. I was still wishing that I would fail on some level. And I didn't even know that. I mean, talk about unconscious beliefs. But there I was, and one day I got really upset about something that had happened at home, and I was standing in the hallway in the corridors of Columbia crying, and there were a bunch of people surrounding me. And the head of the department came over and put his arm around me, and he looked at me and he said, "For someone who is so smart and so beautiful, I can't imagine what's wrong." And suddenly something clicked, because I heard those 2 words in the same sentence. And I realized, and this is embarrassing to admit, I was in my 40s, and I constantly saw those as either or. I didn't know I was seeing that. But all my life, I thought you could either be smart or beautiful. And in that moment, it was like years of hurt had melted away. So I suddenly saw myself in a whole new way. I recognized a beauty in me. And my cousin and I have had many laughs over this, but also lots of pain over it. She went through life, she married 3 times, and the last man she was with was half her age, always looking to make her way in the world through her beauty. And there I was, going to education after education, and again, trying to prove I wasn't smart. And I finally get it, I really am. And it's not an either or. And by the way, my hair is now red. So,
well,
as Zig Ziglar always says about his wife, she's a decided redhead. She decided one day to be a redhead. So to me, that was the sign of my healing, is that I am now the redhead. But I know that it was very painful for me. And I spent most of my life thinking I wasn't beautiful enough for any man to love me, and never got married. And I think it may have been one of the impetus behind going in the convent, although that wasn't the external idea at the time that I knew of. But, you know, these hidden beliefs carry us.
Oh, yes,
but then one year I decided to totally focus on beauty, and not only in myself, but I can't see a person or a thing that isn't beautiful anymore, because it's just so amazing when you look more deeply. I'm sure you've seen couples that are together that both are fairly homely, ugly, if you would, and they look in each other's eyes and they see nothing but wonderful light and beauty. And I think that's what's happened to me, is like I suddenly, when I saw myself differently, I could see everyone and everything else. And I can see beauty, it's going to sound crude, but I had a friend say to me once, "You can see roses growing up out of shit." It's like I see beauty everywhere, and it's a real gift.
Dr. Toni LaMotta, her wonderful book is What You Really Want, Wants You. And we've got to take a break. And Toni, thank you so much for being with me today. And we will be giving out your website after we come back from break. But thank you so much. Your book
is a delight.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go anywhere. We're going to be right back. And, let me give out Toni's website, enlightenedenterprises.com. That's I-N-lightenedenterprises.com. com, and she has a free newsletter that she puts out every week. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast, with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. By the way, phone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. If you're a first-time listener, I'm so delighted that you were able to join us today, and pleased that you're becoming a part of the listening family here at bbsradio.com. And when you call in, all we need is your first name or initial, and of course I love to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, let me do what I do best. Give you my insights, my intuitive perspectives, and then you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you like. By the way, I had said I was going to give you some other information about Dr. Tony's website, and enlightenedenterprises.com, and that's with an I, enlightenedenterprises.com. That's her blog, so you can go to that one, and also just type in Dr. Tony LaMotta, L-A-M-O-T-T-A, and you'll have all kinds of things pop up. And she has a website, Reinvent Midlife. She's got a number of different things on the Internet that you can get information from. So just do it, and you will find that you will be able to get a lot of good details. Lovely woman, and a very, very nice book, What You Really Want Wants You. I wanted to be sure that I covered that, as I promised I would do. Well, I've got a recipe or two that I would like to share with you today. And again, give me a buzz if you want to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I also will be sharing with you, with time allowing, a fabulous story about a woman by the name of Andrea Beloff. And she's just quite a gal. She has a wonderful, wonderful story. Oh, and someone wanted me to mention again my email because they wanted to send me a story, send me something that they felt I might enjoy using on the air. So if you have a special story, if you have a joke, if you have a wonderful recipe just that anybody is going to love, then I want you to send it to Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, international.com. I want you to send it to that email, and I don't know when I'd use it, but I get so much good material that I'm just delighted to hear from you, and I will try to respond as quickly as I can to your email. I wanted to share with you a fun story, and I don't know if you've ever seen the movie made on this, and there was a movie made about a man who did something rather unusual. Now, this was in the 30s. This was a time when technology wasn't as sophisticated as it is today. And in November 1938, the U.S. Secret Service, which is and was at that time very much involved with dealing with counterfeit money. Oh, yes, people were always trying to make the fake stuff so that they could get what they wanted. Well, it was pretty tough back then. It wasn't easy to do counterfeiting. They began to get complaints about phony $1 bills. And this case, when it began, trying to find out who the counterfeiter was for these $1 bills was really challenging. It was amazing. There was a bank teller in New York City that had detected a $1 counterfeit bill. And within the next month, 40 more of these phony bills turned up out of nowhere. And the Secret Service was called, and they said, okay, we'll be able to take care of this. And they had encountered a number of people through the years that had tried to make counterfeit money, and they would typically do larger denominations. Nobody really wanted to bother with the insignificant $1 bill. And usually with the larger denominations, there would be bigger amounts that were spent, but this wasn't the case. Now, this time, the number of the detected bogus bills amounted to 585 by the end of the year. Now, 1938, that wasn't a heck of a lot of money. In today's world, it wouldn't be considered much of anything. Back then, it wasn't an abnormally low amount, but it wasn't abnormally high either. And so they were perplexed. Who ever heard of a counterfeiter who was content to earn less than $2 a day? I mean, this just wasn't computing. They were also puzzled by the fact that the counterfeiter wasn't doing a very good job. The fake bills were printed on cheap paper. The numerals and the letters were sloppily done. The retouched portrait of George Washington was really strange looking. And it even got to a point with these bogus $1 bills that the name of Washington was misspelled. And it was spelled, instead of W-A-S-H-I-N-G-T-O-N, it was W-A-H-S-I-N-G-T-O-N. Now, what was interesting about this whole scenario, as they were investigating it, that this was so poorly done. It was like paper play money. However, the New York storekeepers rarely, if ever, inspected $1 bills. They always were looking for the bigger bills, the $20, $50, $100, even $500 bills that would circulate. That's what they were looking at. The only reason this counterfeit money was caught was because of bank tellers. They were looking at money all day long, and the $1 bills were just as important to them as the $500 bills. Well, a file was started, and it was file number 880. And as agents were assigned to this case, because this went on for a while, they couldn't figure out what was happening. They couldn't find any absolute regular pattern. So the unknown counterfeiter was labeled with old 880 term. That's what they gave him, old 880. Now, 5 years went by, The Secret Service had collected 2,840 of old 8080s dollar bills, had informed 10,000 New York storekeepers how to detect the forgeries, and had distributed 200,000 circulars describing the fake bills. But do you know what? Old 8080 continued to pass the money for more than 9 years before he was finally apprehended. And it was just a weird thing that really caught this guy. Really strange. And this is how it came about. In January 1948, there were seven boys playing in a vacant lot on Manhattan's West Side, and they found an assortment of junk that included two zinc engraving plates and about $30 bills. They found this and they thought, ooh, this is fun. This is, you know, play money. Well, they took it home, and the father of one of the boys turned in some of the bills to the police, who in turn called in the Secret Service. And three agents then were put onto the investigation, and they found that the plates and money had been thrown into the lot by firemen because there had been a blaze in a top-floor apartment of an adjoining tenement, and they just tossed the stuff out. So, next step, where and who was in this apartment? Where was the individual? And they went to this apartment, got into it, because it hadn't been burned up. It had just been slightly damaged. They found more bills, a small printing press, and old 880 himself. His name was Edward Mueller. He was 73 years old. And he had brilliant blue eyes, no teeth, white hair, his mustache matched, and he was totally friendly and just a nondescript kind of a guy. And he happily admitted to the agents that he had made and passed counterfeit dollar bills for 9 years at the rate of $10 to $12 a week to take care of his modest needs. And here was his personal story. His wife had died in 1937. His son and daughter had married and moved away. And he had given up his job as a building superintendent to collect junk in the streets with a pushcart. He cooked his own meals, washed his own laundry, walked his own dog, and whenever he needed cash, he made his own money. I love it. They were only just $1 bills, he said. He said, I never gave more than one of them to any one person, so nobody ever lost more than $1. Now, Mr. Mueller considered himself to be an honest man and was genuinely surprised to be arrested. You know what happened? The agents were so sympathetic. They really liked this guy. Now, in 1948, September, he pleaded guilty before a federal district judge, but in view of his advanced age, he served only 4 months of a year's prison sentence. And before going to jail, old 880, had to pay a nominal fine. Can you imagine what it was? $1. But he had to pay with a real dollar. And there is a movie, I think I saw it, a long time ago, and I believe it was made in the 30s after this case came out, and there was a very famous actor. He was the same man, and his name is escaping me. Maybe one of you out there know it. The same actor that played Santa in The Miracle on 34th Street. Well, he played, I believe, the same role in this old movie about this. And again, I can't recall the title of the movie, but I remember one night, it happened to be on a late time slot, and it was just an amazing story. And I'm trying to think of the name of the actor. There were some very famous people that played the role, but they did make a movie about him. So anyway, that's just a little bit of time trivia and something that is a little bit unusual and a lot of fun to chat about. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. We're going to be taking a break for a moment, and don't forget, tomorrow we are going to be talking with Dr. Richard Petty, one of my favorite people. We're going to be talking about healing, meaning, and purpose. wonderful physician that knows a lot of things about a lot of different medical dome, you know, modalities. So we're going to have a good time. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-88.
Hi, this is Donna. I have a recipe here for turkey quesadillas, which I think is wonderful. They are one of my favorite foods. Often when there's a particular restaurant that we go to, that is an appetizer, and it just is so delicious the way they fix it that I enjoy it as a meal in and of itself. And it's something that if you have company and you want to keep it light for summer, this is a recipe that I just think is absolutely great. Wendy Granke from Round Rock, Texas, this is her particular recipe for quesadillas, so, and they're turkey quesadillas. So I thought I would share them with you because they're real quick, real easy. And if you had a slew of people over, and especially young people, if you wanted to say, I could fix something really quickly and have time to visit and just sit and relax and enjoy the beautiful weather outside during the summer, this is easy to do. So let me give you the ingredients. The first thing is 1 pound of lean ground turkey, 1 pound of lean ground turkey, 1 cup chopped red onion, 1 cup chopped onion, 1 to 2 garlic cloves minced, 1 to 2 garlic cloves minced, 2 cups of julienne zucchini, 2 cups of julienne zucchini, 1 cup salsa, 1 cup salsa, 1 cup frozen corn, 1 cup frozen corn, 1 cup julienned sweet red peppers, 1 cup julienned sweet red peppers, 1 can, about 4 ounces of chopped green chilies, 1 can of chopped green chilies, 2 tablespoons of minced fresh cilantro, 1/2 teaspoon dried oregano, 1/2 teaspoon ground cumin, again, 1/2 teaspoon each of dried oregano and cumin, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/8 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. You're going to need 8 flour tortillas, 8-inch size, 8-inch flour tortillas, 8-inch size, 2 cups of shredded Mexican blend cheese, the spicy cheese if you like, and you can use regular or reduced fat, whatever is your pleasure. This is how simple it is. You want to cook your turkey in a nonstick skillet. Add your onion and garlic as well and cook it until the meat is no longer pink. You want to drain it. Any juices and fat you want to drain off. You want to add your zucchini, your salsa, corn, red peppers, and chilies. Reduce your heat, cover, and simmer until vegetables are tender, and then stir in your seasonings. So that's all ready to go. And then for each quesadilla, you place 1 tortilla in an ungreased nonstick skillet. Sprinkle with about 1/4 cup of cheese. Top with about 1/2 cup of filling. Then another 1/4 cup of cheese. Cover with another tortilla. And, of course, you spread it around a little bit on the tortilla, filling the space. Then you cook it over medium heat. Turn once until light brown on both sides and the cheese begins to melt. And then cut it into 8 wedges. It yields this. With the 8 tortillas, you've got 4 quesadillas cut, and it is really fast, really simple, and you could even prepare your ingredients ahead if you wanted to, And then that way all you had to do is just heat them up. So when company comes, everything's cooked, ready to go, and you're just ready to put the quesadillas together. And if you like beer, it's good with beer. If you like your soft drinks, hot, cold tea, whatever works, whatever you enjoy. But that is that. So anyway, that's a quick recipe, something that's great for summertime, actually anytime. It's quick, easy, and you can even adapt the recipe and use whatever other ingredients you have, whatever's handy in your vegetable department in the refrigerator. And also you can use different meats if you so desire. I like chicken a lot. That's something I really enjoy. One person making a difference. Absolutely. And Andrea Beloff, when she was younger, was someone that really went through some very, very difficult times. She ended up getting bone cancer. And her mom and dad just absolutely were overwhelmed. This was a verdict given to her when she was 15 years of age. And they didn't even know that she was going to survive. She went through the treatment. There were miserable times during the treatment. But someone came to her and said, you're going to have a wish that's going to be given to you. She talked to some other kids that were in the hospital with her, and they said, you'll get a wish fulfilled. And she was told about the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So she thought, all right, what would I wish for? Well, there was a woman named Julie that came to visit her. Remember, she's 15 years old. She said, I knew that my wish was a big one, but she also knew that the Make-A-Wish Foundation could make phenomenal things happen. So when they asked her what she wanted to do, she said, I want to go see my cousins in Brazil. They said, we'll fulfill your wish. Pretty hard for her to believe, but she had something to look ahead to. She would, whenever she started getting discouraged, imagine herself being in Brazil visiting family. Well, after 18 months, she was, according to all reports, cancer-free. And at that time also, she was boarding a plane with her mom for an all-expense-paid trip to go to Brazil. She said, this is phenomenal. It was just amazing to her. She ended up graduating from college. She went to work as a hospital administrator. During these years, she managed to volunteer at a camp for children that had cancer, but she always wanted to do more. Then, when she was almost 30, and she was cancer-free, she happened to meet the person that so many years before had made sure that her wish was going to be accomplished. And when she was talking with Julie, she thought to herself, I'd like to be able to do what you do. So she told Julie about her feelings, and Julie said, all you have to do is sign up, and you can be a part. So that's what she did. Since that time, she has fulfilled wishes for many, many children. Like Julie, she is making sure that children's wishes come to pass. And she said, it's made such a difference in her life. Parents are moved to tears. Kids beam because of what she's able to accomplish. And she said, there's nothing like making a child that has a devastating disease smile. She said, for that moment, hour, day, or week, they don't think about how sick they are. They're just happy. And that's why I do it. She said, because I know how powerful a wish can be. And she's cancer-free today and so dedicated to what she's doing. Now, here are some suggestions. If you as an individual would like to be able to do something like Andrea does, well, all you have to do is what she suggests. She said, it starts with a call. Parents, doctors, nurses, or kids themselves can call to propose a candidate. And the Make-A-Wish Foundation telephone number is 800-722-9474. 722-9474, 800. Any child 2.5 to 18 with a life-threatening medical condition is eligible as long as he or she's never had a wish granted before. And then the next thing that happens, a fairy godmother appears, a wish granter visits the child and starts planning the wish. Kids choose from 4 categories, a trip, a gift, a meeting with someone special, or becoming someone like a firefighter or a ballerina for a day. Then behind the scenes, magic happens. They talk with the family to learn more about the child and make the wish experience even more special. If it's for a computer, the grantors might create a mouse pad with the child's favorite animal on it. And then special people put it all together. Volunteers gather donations from airlines, restaurants, limo companies, and more to make the wish come true. If you want to help, then all you have to do is go to www.wish.org. www.wish.org. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Your wish can be fulfilled, no matter who you are, and you don't have to have a devastating disease to achieve it. Hold it in your heart, your mind, and then take those steps to make it a reality. Donna Sebo here. Be back same time, same place tomorrow, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.